and welcome to the November issue of the Oldie podcast. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Lucy Deeds about her time spent working in a smart food shop in Petworth, West Sussex last year, and the levels of fussiness she encountered between old and young alike. Lucy is the daughter of the journalist W.F. Deeds, privatised Dear Bill, and the mother of Sophia Moneycoutts, who I spoke with in the October issue podcast about modern manners, and the author of a fantastic new book, The Plus One. Lucy, please can you tell us a bit about the posh food shop you worked at?
Well, it was a good shop for a small town. It was pretty exciting for everybody when it opened. A bit different. A lot of things nobody could get normally. Fantastic bread, all very artisan-y, cheese. Beautiful, absolutely lovely shop. Beautiful shop. Busy, sandwiches. The sort of things you'd get, like, get in London, but not so much in the country.
Oh, that's it. So called a glamorous farm shop, upmarket shop.
Yeah, definitely.
Sort of deli counter, eat
deli
your heart
counter,
out.
Butchers, you know, the lot.
Really. Oh, it sounds very delicious. What was the main age group of your customers?
Everything, I would say, from kind of young people getting coffees and meeting girlfriends for coffee, or couples shopping at weekend, big weekend shops. And then the locals coming for their veg and whatever. It's completely no age group particularly.
So a real mix.
Yeah, good mix.
Because fussiness is generally thought to be a millennial trait, or millennials sort of cast as being these very sort of picky human beings.
Yes.
But it sounds like in the piece you mentioned that the older people also were
They could be quite picky. They could be quite difficult if exactly what they wanted wasn't there, which is kind of a new thing for me. I kind of was surprised by that in a way, because I just don't get that stirred up about food. I mean, I love food, but I don't think it's anything to get angry about if something you want is there at this minute.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also in the piece you do mention that some older ladies comment on the absence of gluten-free cake, despite there being about 15 other types of cake on offer.
Yeah, there was plenty of cake. Admittedly, not that much gluten-free, but they obviously weren't gluten-free anyway because they fell upon the bread. So it's just some people just like to test your resources, a bit.
It's almost comical the time people can lose floating around supermarket aisles making decisions. The paradox of choice is often that more is in fact less. You talk about your happy childhood days when you ate what you were given and then got on with your day.
Yeah.
What was your father's attitude to food?
Very, very frugal. Well, he'd been a soldier, so he was used to being very plain. And he was very happy with soup. We always had bantams. My mother was very much a sort of little, she had a small holding, so there was always our lamb, our chickens, our eggs, Jersey cow. It was all pretty homegrown. The weekend, the week's grocery shop would fit into one small cardboard box. That was kind of not very much. So it was fairly, they were wartime generation too. It was fairly simple.
Yeah. So all the fussiness that you came across in the shop was new and quite horrifying.
Well, I just sometimes, it just makes me laugh because I just don't think food is the thing to really get too bothered about, is it? And the coffee dramas, with the right sort of milks and the right sort of toppings and the
So was there also sort of remaking of coffees if they didn't?
A lot of remaking, yep, endless. And do we do nut milk? We did do almond and soy milk actually, but it's just in a busy shop that you used to get manic making coffees and then with these orders. And I think a lot of people don't actually know what they're drinking with those coffees because they want a skinny cappuccino or skinny latte. And I'd say, if you really want it skinny, why not have an Americano, a little bit of milk? They go, oh! I think people honestly don't really know what they're ordering half the time.
No, it's almost like an education piece in itself. Like, do you know what is in your coffee?
Yeah, I think probably not. I don't think they realise how much milk is in all those coffees.
Yeah, it's sort of one shot of coffee to sort of...
Yeah, it's like half an inch of coffee in the bottom of the cup and the rest is milk.
And a lot of milk.
So it's...
And the chocolate sprinkles.
Fueling our obesity crisis. I'd say, those coffees.
Yeah, definitely. What is the most ridiculous comment you overheard at the deli counter?
Oh, no, that's terrible. Oh, God.
or did you ever witness an argument over the final slice of cheese?
Oh, there used to be sort of tantrums over if there was no more. Truffle pecorino used to go quite quickly. Anything with truffles in it, I can't really be dealing with. But people love truffle pecorino, and that was, you know, there'd be a sort of agitated queue if there was only a little bit left. Cheese was quite a major kind of, because people come in with very firm. I've been to France and we had this cheese. We were just one mountain left of whatever. And do you know which cheese it was? And things really.
Expecting sort of great specialist knowledge of like, well, where the cheese is sourced.
I knew where they were from, but I'm not able to, wouldn't be able to identify a cheese from a village that they've been to when they were skiing.
And would they ask you questions about the background of all the food and what the farmer was like?
Yeah, I'm keen on that. I'm more keen on questions about the provenance than about the kind of single estate olive oil from the third windmill on the left, you know, under the pointy hill. It's got to be that very olive oil. But I think it's good if they want to know about the cows and about the farmer. And our meat, the meat was amazing. You know, it was all free range. It was all local, very local.
That's really good.
And I think they should know about the happy sheep or chicken.
Yeah. Do you think that the ever-changing conflicting headlines about food contribute to the confusion about what we should be eating? It's impossible to keep up or know what to believe.
I know, it does change all the time. But I think we're just too obsessed about food, full stop. If we thought about it a bit less, maybe we wouldn't worry about weight. One minute we're doing no gluten, no dairy, no work. The next minute, no fats, and because the sugar thing arose, all the yogurts,
yeah.
Low fats meant high sugar. We've cottoned onto that now, so we're going the other way. It is confusing, but I think my parents' generation would have said, sorry to hark back to them, but
yeah.
That was kind of my formative years.
Yeah.
A moderation in all things. There was always plenty of food. My mother loved chocolate, they loved their whiskey there, but just not loads of anything, really.
Yeah.
I think maybe we go overboard about certain things and think, oh, this is good for us, so we'll have it every day and every meal and I just think about it a bit less.
Yeah, and you'll be doing yourself a massive favour.
Yeah, just don't get obsessed about it. It's not like we're in a siege situation or a Cold War with queuing for bread. There is plenty of everything.
Mm.
So I don't think people really need to get angsty about
no.
What's there or running out or how many seeds or...
What about food trends? So there's been sort of long... There's a bit of a trend for avocados,
yeah.
For example. Was that reflected in what was available on the shelves in the shop?
Yeah, we always had fruit. Yes, I mean, that was always quite difficult to get an avocado right, actually. And our fruit and veg counter wasn't very huge, so that could be a drama if they weren't ripe. But what did we have? No, the fruit and veg were probably fairly stable, but yeah, I mean, there's always a chorizo thing that seems to have been around for too long, but people seem to put it into everything, so that's always popular.
Yeah.
What's good? People
like different teas and things like that.
Yeah,
and
teas, lots of herb teas, which you wouldn't have got, would you? 10, no. 15 years ago, you might have got chamomile, but now you can get pretty much anything.
Different oils and
the different oils, truffle oils, nut oils, pumpkin seed oil. There is everything. You can get pretty much everything.
It is a bit overwhelming.
And I think it's great that you can get everything, but I just sometimes think, do we get a bit obsessed about it? I don't know.
Too much time spent thinking about what to buy than actually sort of getting on and having fun, living your life.
Yeah, I think. Somebody was talking the other day about how Tom Watson has done amazingly well and lost like 8 stone or something. And there was a bit of a debate going on in the Times letter pages about people, how men lose weight because they just stop thinking about food, apparently. That's their method. They can do it. Whereas women are always thinking about food for one, whether they're cooking or they've got to buy it or they've got children to feed.
Mm.
So women are not quite so good at sticking at diets because they have a sort of more complicated relationship with food.
Mm. So you talk in the piece about food being fuel for your parents, who you meant to have born during the First World War.
Yeah.
They ate lunch and then they got on with their day. I read somewhere before in this conversation that to think of food simply as fuel now is to undermine what food means to society, culture, and what it means to be a human being.
Gosh, meaning that's too simplistic to think of
food. Yeah, that yeah, now...
I mean, it's definitely, it's a generation thing, mm-hmm. I'm sure. There wasn't any choice for them, and therefore that's how we were brought up. Of course, we longed for sliced white bread and chocolate and fizzy lemonade when we were little. But I think you kind of go back to what you were brought up with.
Yeah, and because it worked.
And my mother was very early sort of soil association organic stuff. Mm. So she had to grind her own corn in an amazing machine. Mm.
Which is very sort of trendy now, I suppose.
Yeah, she was quite ahead of herself in that way. So it was all organic. It was just, there just wasn't so much, quite so much pickiness or allergies. You kind of, if you didn't like something, you didn't
just avoid it.
Didn't have it, or you maybe ate a little bit just to. Mm. Whereas now people will say, I was at a drinks party the other day and Savannah immediately said, oh no, sorry, I can't have that, I can't have dairy. There was only about six of us just having a drink and she just made some smoked salmon on bread, but no, he said you put cream cheese on it, and his wife couldn't have it because of the bread. And they, I think it's the way some people, it's a sort of badge of honour, the fact that they can't have something. Whereas 20, 30 years ago, it was considered quite rude to say that. If you don't like it, just ignore it.
Yeah, keep away from it.
Don't hang on about your allergies or your...
And it's interesting that now, I suppose, in my experience, that if I'm having people over for supper, it will always be ahead of cooking. Does anybody have any dietary requirements? Yeah. And I mean, I wonder if for you, when you were 30, were you also, if you were cooking supper for friends, would you always be like, oh, you know, and between my friends, there's now a real mixture of vegetarians, gluten-free. And
yeah, I bet. But there really wasn't. I promise you, it sounds bizarre, dark ages, but I can't ever remember anyone saying they couldn't eat anything. There were obviously people having babies, maybe they weren't going to drink very much, or if at all, but literally, I can't think of anybody saying I can't have that. I just really know, it sounds awful, anybody who was a vegetarian.
Yeah,
or it wasn't really
common.
No, certainly wasn't common. People just kind of ate what they were given, really, and maybe... We were very unsophisticated, obviously. It's got to be a good thing that so much is available now. It's great. But in a funny way, we've done all the sort of getting exotic things. Now we're doing a slight U-turn now and cutting down animals and wanting local again. So we've done a little turned a little corner back to sort of my parents' way of living.
Do you think it's made people having all this choice has made people more complicated? And so it's because there's so many ways to have a more complicated dietary requirement. And obviously people, now there's all the reports in the news about younger generations suffering mental health problems, and it's just so many options available to us, and so many ways to live your life and all these different choices, what could possibly be right?
That again has got to be a good thing, that we're not just cramming in food, we are thinking about what's good, what fuel our bodies with, and how to avoid. Well, Tom Watson had diabetes, so he's cut it out, and that's totally brilliant.
Yeah,
I've got cancer, or I have a sort of history of cancer, so I'm reasonably careful about lots of greens and all of that, not very much red meat. So I think it's good that everybody's got on top of, let's have lots of fish, let's have not too much red meat, dairy, people come and go with dairy. Actually, when our children, my children were little, you gave them lots of milk. I imagine people don't so much now because it's not considered great.
Yeah.
But they did. I think we've become much better at preventing disease through food, which is important.
Yeah, my next question sort of slightly relates to that. That now that we know more about food, we're told that we should eat certain foods to make us think better, lose weight, stave off dementia, etc.
Mm.
Arguably, food is no longer just fuel, but a tool to use to our advantage. It sort of ties into the survival of the fittest, that, you know, if we eat the certain things, that we'll perform at our very best.
Mm. I think certainly if you're a phenomenal athlete, then obviously your trainer partner, you will have it down to a fine art, exactly how many calories, what's good. Although that's changed as well, because my husband Crispin was a oarsman, he rowed for Oxford, and they just ate a lot of carbs, huge amount of carbs. They were sponsored by Mars Bar, they ate chocolate, they had massive fry-ups, sort of mixed grill, which probably, I bet they don't now.
I imagine they probably don't.
Yeah,
it
would be much more
disciplined
and disciplined, yeah. So, but yeah, of course it makes total sense to eat.
It's interesting how from a sports perspective, it's all sort of about loading and carbs and having the energy, but then I've also read that in Silicon Valley they have they add this special ingredient to their coffee and it sort of enhances their brain. It's actually, I think they add some like some lard or something to their coffee.
That's a Russian, isn't that a Tibetan or something? They put
perhaps
butter,
it is,
they put butter in their tea or
yeah.
something.
Yeah and it's now it's a sort of Silicon Valley formula for the sort of high-performing brains, and it's apparently far superior to your regular sort of caffeine fix.
Well, I'm such a hypocrite, because here am I being very judgmental about people, and I had, I got quite into turmeric lattes for a while, because I'm supposed to have lots of turmeric.
Yeah.
And actually, hot milk with turmeric is the most delicious thing.
Is it?
It's amazingly good.
And it's great for your joints as well, turmeric.
Yes, I think so. Now I just
my dad's.
And turmeric and black pepper, you have to have black pepper so you can absorb it. But it is delicious, so I shouldn't really bang on about people in their coffees, because I'm probably one of them.
That's good. Talking about, you were saying that your mum was sort of one of the early advocates for organic farming,
yeah,
and
much.
Was involved in soil, the
soil association.
Yeah, right
from the beginning, really.
A few weekends ago, I went to the Good Life Experience Festival, which was in Harden in Wales, and I felt like that was a brilliant celebration of sort of going back to basics in the best possible way. And at the festival there was Roger Phillips, who is Britain, even the world's authority on mushrooms, in mushroom identification, and took a group of us foraging in the forest of the sort of the castle forests. And then he did cookery around an open fire, sort of taught people about all the mushrooms, all that sort of delicious ingredients, and it was brilliant. There was sort of various chefs there, including somebody called Valentine Warner, who had arrived a day ahead of the festival kicking off and had gone around the estate and shot some pigeons. Then he cooked them around the fire. And it was all using what is
very
available
much.
On the land.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, my mother was a good one. She was very in favour of all that.
Yeah, it
we
was
had
so
a lot
nice.
Of pigeon. Well, yes, we would have had pigeon. No, we wouldn't have had pigeon. The butcher probably, because nobody shot really in our family. But we did eat a lot of rabbit, because the butchers then sold rabbit. They don't really now, not in this country.
No,
we ate a lot of rabbit, as children. A lot of rabbit. A lot of lamb, because we had lamb.
Mm.
Chicken was a vast treat. Chicken was very expensive then.
Oh, gosh.
But yeah, the whole sort of living off the land thing is brilliant. Mum made butter. She didn't make cheese. But she made beer at one point. Yogurt.
And when you think about how it tastes compared to the butter you get from the shop, did it taste quite different?
No, I think we probably moaned like mad as children, because it would have been slightly, there's always a slight tang. You have to eat homemade butter, you need to eat quite quick. It doesn't last. It hasn't got preservatives or whatever in it. It can be a bit, that slightly tang of, people used to always sniff the milk. You don't do it now because it lasts forever.
Yeah,
yeah. Back then, you'd always sort of take the milk out of the fridge and give it a sniff. And the butter could be, I remember my older brother was a bit kind of made faces, And we only had a larder when I was little. We didn't even have a fridge.
So that is,
we're talking very basic times. This is what, early 60s, whatever, 50s, 60s. And things didn't keep forever.
And in terms of fussiness,
yeah,
were when you had friends, or I wonder if all your friends, whether they, their parents made their butter or made their mayonnaise, or
like, not many, not going back then, you mean of mum's generation?
I was thinking of going to your friends' houses or people coming over for supper. Were they impressed or
no? I mean, in those days everyone just that's how we lived and they were used to it. It was fairly dad was an MP then, so I do remember an au pair made us a stew, us children, out of dog meat from time, which was quite clearly, you used to get it from the butcher and it was marked with green ink. It was like condemned. And she made us a stew out of it. I mean, we were none the worse.
None the worse.
No, nobody suffered.
But I was wondering if perhaps your brothers say, when they came over, like if they'd been at a friend's house, would they say, oh, like, mum, why can't we have, mayonnaise from Hellman's?
Longing for things like
but
that.
But actually,
we did. I mean, it wasn't a totally frugal, but stuff like that did get bought. We did have mustard and ketchup and stuff. We didn't totally
have
bread and butter. But, yes, we longed to go. I remember a family of friends, and their teas were just, we loved as children going to tea there because everything was chocolate. Kit Kats Kit Kats, penguins.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And Coca-Cola, we never heard of such a thing.
In bottles,
exotic,
I suppose.
I suppose it wasn't. Yeah. But then when I was married and had small children, I kind of went back to making my own bread I make marmalade, that my mother did, and I sell marmalade, and doing all those things. So you kind of have you go and get all the things because you can, and then you sort of return to the basics again, maybe.
And I guess it's time consuming, but it's really enjoyable.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have made something.
Yeah, I think we've all got our criteria of what we like to waste time on.
Yeah.
I like making marmalade and bread. Some people make pasta. I've never made pasta, we've all got our sort of cut-off point of what seems to be awfully long-winded. Mum was always making soup. That was it. My dad actually lived off soup because when he was at the telegraph, he'd come in very late, like 11, 12, and there'd be always soup in the bottom of the Thiago. And he'd have a boiled egg or something.
Oh,
he was very happy.
So
whisky
nice.
And soup for dinner. Happy as Larry.
Perfect. And a side question, this is from our editor, Harry Matt. I mentioned in the introduction that Spy Money Coots is your daughter, who has written a fantastic bestseller with some steamy scenes.
Yeah.
He has asked how you feel about your daughter writing saucy sex stories.
Well, it wasn't entirely a surprise because obviously when she was writing it, she'd say, oh God, I've got to go and write a sex scene now. There was always a lot of chat about it. And they're quite, my children are, lots of information. There's not much that doesn't get shared on the table. So we were sort of having, we had a fair old clue of what was coming up. It was, I think, brilliant for her. How brilliant she is. She went to a cafe and did, she does most of her writing in a cafe up the road. And the idea of sitting there, tippy-tap, very noisy, her boyfriend hates that she makes so much noise on her keyboard.
It's very satisfying that
you make a noise.
I can do
it quite quietly. But doing her sex scenes with chaos unfolding all around her little children, I think, well done her.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
Managing to sort of turn her brain off to all the surrounds.
Yeah, I got probably into it. I think I did a piece for the Mail the other day. I mean, I think they thought I was going to be much more shocked.
Oh,
about
right.
All that than I was.
All the raunch.
Yeah. It's expected now. You need it in a book.
Yeah.
It's jolly difficult to do, actually.
Yeah.
I've tried when I'm trying to write fiction. And it is very hard to kind of get it right. But Soph is quite, calls a spade, so, she's gets on with it.
Done really well. Well, Lucy, thank you so much for coming in for a chat.
Pleasure.
And we look forward to reading your piece, and people will to read it in the November issue of the magazine.